Here's Denny Long.
Yes, indeed. I am joined from the University of Minnesota by Mary Meyer, Professor Emeritus Mary Meyer. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Denny. Great to hear your voice.
Find out what's new this year.
Oh, we're getting a little echo. I'm not sure.
Okay, how does this sound? Can you hear me?
I think we're good to go. We're good to go.
Great.
All right, Mary.
A great day for gardening.
Oh, you know, I know it's cooler than average, as we've been hearing, but I wanted to ask you, this has to be great. I mean, my lawn, after last year's drought, my lawn looks better than it has in quite some time. This cool weather is good for that, isn't it?
The cool weather is great for lawns, and we've had a wonderful amount of moisture this spring. So cool weather, you can see the cool season grasses that we grow and cool season vegetables really enjoy this weather. And, you know, flowers last longer when it's cool. So we are able to enjoy right now azaleas blooming and lilacs at the same time. So we often don't see that in the spring, but it's just a gorgeous weather pattern for many plants.
Can we plant things like, you know, Memorial Day, for years people, you know, end up planting their gardens, their vegetables and things. This is okay to do this now. I presume we're pretty safe to,
yes,
to get that done.
Yes, it is pretty safe to get that done. We really have very, very rarely do we get a frost this late in the year. It can happen in low spots, but certainly in northern Minnesota. But for the most part, we are frost-free. We're into our growing season. And as we've been saying, the cool season crops, coal crops, lettuce, the leafy greens and so on, like cool weather. Our warm season crops, tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, squashes, they would like to have it a little bit warmer, but they're still okay. And yes, I have planted almost my total garden now, so I'm getting almost done with planting vegetables.
And working outside is really comfortable this time of year.
Oh, yes. It's so comfortable. That's right.
You mentioned like northern Minnesota. We got a text message from a listener earlier this morning. Now, it's 63 now officially in the Twin Cities. He is spending the weekend in Two Harbors area. Said it was raining in 44 in Two Harbors.
Oh, so my definitely, gosh, such a difference.
Yes.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, for sure. But I wanted to invite our listeners to join in. Mary, if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, and if you're a regular listener to the show, you know we tend to get really busy here with questions, either by phone or by text. If you'd like to call and chat with Mary, great. If you want to just send Mary your lawn or garden question via text, that's good, too. It's just one number to remember for either the phone call or text, and that number is 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. So don't wait. Give us a call or send that text right away. Here's one that came in a bit ago, Mary. It says, text that is, I have something eating holes in my coneflower leaves. All my other flowers are fine, not being eaten. What do you think that could be?
It's hard to tell exactly what it is without finding the insect. One thing that does do quite a bit of damage if the holes are large are slugs. And slugs really come out, they're nocturnal, so they come out at night. So it could be hard to locate them and see them unless you go out with a flashlight at night and start looking. But until you can actually find the insect, we really don't recommend that you do anything except close inspection, underside of the leaf, down in where the leaves are close together. You might find some insects hiding. If you also can find a pattern to the way the damage is done on the leaf, the four-lined plant bug makes quite a pattern. Its holes are so perfect, and they're like a hole punch took an eight part of the leaf. But slugs are not so perfect. They are along the edges, or they will take bigger chunks out. You can also go to the website, our extension.umn.edu, and look up what insect is that, or what's wrong with my plant, for pictures that might look like the damage you have. But until you can find the insect, I would say just continue to do inspection. Try to find that insect.
I was just going to mention, I thought that would be a great idea to get on the university website. We'd love to mention that anyway throughout this hour, extension.umn.edu. And we'll do that again before Mary leaves us today. Again, here is our phone number. It's also the text number, 651-461-9226. Let's grab a phone call or two, Mary. I think Julie is calling in from Fridley this morning. Julie, you're on with Mary. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. I live on the river, and I have these big cottonwood trees, and I've got carpenter ants. I had a big limb trimmed, and they came into contact with a big nest of carpenter ants. My question is, what can I do?
Well, there are specific chemicals that will control ants. There are ant baits that you can use that you actually sprinkle onto actually where the nest is. And as long as you use those according to recommendations, that can take care of the ants. Depending on exactly where they are, hot water is another treatment for ants. Of course, if you put that on a living plant, that's going to kill the plant itself with the hot water. But sometimes ants in brick walkways and so on, you can kill them or disturb them by using hot water. So I would say either use a recommended ant bait that you follow the directions on, or try the hot water method. I'm not really sure, Julie, exactly where the ants are, but it seems like that somehow they may be moved when the cottonwood tree was trimmed, I think.
Okay. Well, good luck with that, Julie. Michael, you're going to be next. We're going to take a break here, real quick break. And again, Mary, let's invite our listeners to join in either by phone or by text, 651-461-9226. If you're just joining us, Mary Meyer from the U of M is answering your lawn and garden questions here on our Smart Garden Show on this Saturday morning, News Talk 830 WCCO, 63 degrees. We'll be right back. And welcome this Saturday morning to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with from the University of Minnesota, Professor Mary Meyer. Mary, we've got, as usual, so many callers and so many texters. Let's get back to it. I think Michael and Blaine is going to be next up here on the phone, then we'll grab some text. Michael, good morning. What is your question for Mary?
Yes, good morning. Up in the north end of Blaine where I live, including on our yard, many of the ash trees this year seem to really have leafed late, and some are still not leafed fully. You can see buds on them, they're not coming, you know, versus the maple trees, whatever. I have three ash trees in my yard when we built our house in 30 years ago, but so many of them, and then there are a lot of dead branches on the trees too. So is that an ash borer issue, or is that just the stress of the tree this year from drought last year?
Michael, good observation on your part. Yes, we have seen this with quite a lot of variability with ash this spring. I was looking at some yesterday, two ash trees right beside each other. One looked very good, and the other was like, oh, wow. Well, only about a third of it had foliage on it. I think you're right. I think that any tree that's been stressed with a drought in the past year, last year especially, would be showing weaker growing this spring. We also know about the emerald ash borer. That is really is still advancing throughout Minnesota. There are more counties now this spring that are showing up that have the emerald ash borer. When trees get weakened and are in a weakened condition, they seem to be more susceptible to something like the emerald ash borer. So this is a case where you really need to watch those trees and make a decision about the care for the future. Preventative sprays do help to reduce the infection and prolong the life of ash trees, but it does seem inevitable that we are going to lose a lot of trees to the emerald ash borer. So another good strategy is plant another tree. Think about what additional diversity you can put in your lawn and garden area with planting different kinds of trees. There are many tree care companies that do the injections that will help slow down or prevent emerald ash borer. But yes, we just see a lot of this happening. So for the most part, I think you really have to face it that the trees are, we're going to lose a lot of ash. So planting other trees is a great strategy.
Very good. Mary, this texter says, this last summer we planted some birch tree clusters. It was in the drought. When they came back this year, several branches don't have any leaves on them. Should we prune them? Comes from Amy in Lake Elmo.
Yes, I would go ahead and do that pruning. Take out anything that is dead. Birch tend to have deciduous branches as well as deciduous leaves. So they do tend to shed a lot of branches on the ground. But yes, if you don't have leaves coming out now, I would prune those off. And you can do some close inspection. When you prune, start at the tip, and you can look at the inside of the branch. If it's totally brown and snaps off, you know, there's no green tissue there, then that branch is dead. But you might find halfway back that the tissue is green. So I would just only prune off what is dead.
Okay. Let us take a phone call next. Ellen, I believe, is calling you from Outing this morning. Ellen, thanks for calling. What's your question for Mary?
Yeah, I'm in northern Minnesota, and I have a limited growing or a limited garden space. And for the last 2 years, my tomatoes especially have just been decimated with blight. And so I got some blight-resistant seeds, started my own, but then I'm augmenting with some commercial ones also. My question is I have now decided to try grow bags so that I can have all new soil. And I've got all of the plants planted in the grow bags. I'm going to set them on top of the existing garden bed. It just occurred to me that the seeds I started were determinate seeds. The ones that I bought from like Home Depot or some are indeterminate. Do I have to do, because they're in grow bags, they're not in the ground, do I have to do anything to get those to bear fruit?
No, you really don't, Ellen. That determinate and indeterminate is what the bud is at the very top of the tomato. Determinate ones end with a flower and they become shorter. Indeterminate never really quits. It has leaves at the top bud, so it becomes taller and taller. So the determinate ones are just going to be short plants, kind of easier to maintain. Indeterminate, they'll grow and get as tall as they possibly can. But tomatoes are self-fruitful, so if one plant will set fruit, as long as you have them in full sun, that's kind of the biggest limiting factor, is really tons of light. And of course, the longer the growing season, that helps. But it sounds like you've done a lot of research, and I hope that you've got a good crop this year.
Excellent. Let's take another phone call. We'll have a look at the forecast, then we'll do a bunch of text messages, Mary. Billy is calling in, I believe, from Malacca this morning. Billy, thanks for waiting. What's your question for Mary?
I just planted a autumn blaze maple on Wednesday, and we're noticing the leaves are starting to turn a little bit brown at the bottom. Is there any hope for this tree?
Oh, yes. I certainly hope so, Billy. Autumn Blaze is a wonderful selection named for the beautiful fall color that that maple has. But it could be just suffering a little bit from transplant shock. So was this a container or bald and burlapped?
Container.
Yeah, container. So that's good. That means the root system is probably well developed within that container, but it's just a change in the conditions where it was growing before and where you have it now. I would pay attention to watering it. We've had good rainfall so far this spring, but you want to make sure that you water it at least once a week. And there are different ways you can water a tree. Last year, we developed, Extension developed some wonderful videos showing you three different ways to water a tree. So you can't just go out there with a hose and for 1 minute stand there. That's not enough. So there are some methods of timing yourself three different places around the tree, really putting the hose at the end, or using some of the gator bags that you have a volume of water that you want to put on that tree. So watering is really critical the first year.
Okay. Let us do this, Mary. Let's take a break. We'll have a look at that forecast, see what the weather looks like for this coming week. Then we have about another half hour of the show to go here on a Smart Garden Show. Any kind of a lawn or garden question from Mary Meyer from the U of M, you can call it in or text it in at 651-461-9226. We'll be back with the forecast in a moment here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota, answering your lawn and garden questions, either by phone or by text, as usual. Here is that one number to remember for either, 651-461-9226. As usual, too, Mary, we have callers and we have texters, but I was thinking, what a beautiful weekend to get to the Arboretum.
Oh, yes. There are so many things blooming at the Arboretum now, Denny. The azaleas, you know, the Northern Lights azaleas are something the University of Minnesota has been breeding and releasing for many, many years. And they are orange and yellow and pink and white, and they are so fragrant. And they are just about or right at their peak now. So they are gorgeous. There's still lilacs that you can see blooming, and the peonies are starting to bloom. So we're a little later this year with our peonies blooming, but the first ones are just starting to come out. So it's a fabulous day to go to the Arboretum. Today is also all about Dogs Day at the Arboretum. And so if you're not aware of this, there are certain days that the Arboretum is open to people who get the dog memberships and people bring their dogs on a leash. So if you do go today from 10 to 2, you will see more dogs than you normally do at the Arboretum. But this is something that arboretums across the country have been opening up for dogs to come with certain times and certain ways they can enjoy the Arboretum also. But yes, it's a fabulous time to see the Arboretum.
But we have to register online, right?
Oh, yes. Thanks for reminding us. Yes, you still register online. Actually, I'm going there with my grandsons today, and I was just in between calls here making the reservation. So every half hour, there are several hundred people that are admitted. So admission is not an issue. We just are now asking everyone to register online. On days that are busy at the Arboretum, this has actually helped everyone get parking and find access to all the facilities without any abnormally large crowds. So I think we will continue our reservation system for the future. You just have to remember to do it online. But honestly, sometimes people are sitting in the entry drive online, their phones, making their reservations. So you need to do that, but it's easy to do.
Absolutely, and it's much more efficient, too. It helps everybody, for sure. All right, let's get back to business here. Let's grab a phone call before we pick up on text messages. Larry is calling in, I believe, from West St. Paul this morning. Larry, what is your question for Mary?
Good morning. I have a rhododendron issue. The plant, it's doing wonderful, but I can no longer look out my living room window. How far back can I cut it?
That's an issue. Well, I would say, yes, it's hard for me to tell you to prune the rhododendron because they are so beautiful. I would say don't take off more than one third of the plant. And you can take off some smaller, shorter pieces, you know, 1 or 2 foot pieces. If you go all the way back to the ground and take off a couple of those stems, that can work too. You can do pruning at the base or just around the tip. But I wouldn't take off more than a third of it. But this time of year is a good time to prune it right after it flowers, right?
Okay. Mary, we had another. I can't find it now. We had another text. It was somewhere down the screen about transplanting a rhododendron. Can you do that now?
You can. The smaller the plant, the better. Rhododendrons are a little bit difficult to transplant. They're not difficult to plant if they've been growing in a container, but it is harder to get a lot of that root system. And because they are evergreen, they've always got their leaves or their foliage on, you can't really do it when they're totally dormant. I mean, they're never totally dormant because they're evergreens. But yes, I would try it in the spring because you've got the whole summer now for the plant to adjust. So I'd wait till after it finishes flowering, dig the hole where you're going to put it before you start digging up the plant.
Okay, very good. Thank you, listener, for that. Should you transplant, this texter says, a hibiscus tree into another container from the original one?
Well, you can continue doing this as the tree gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I think this caller is probably referring to the hibiscus that's not hardy but make beautiful shrubs that flower a lot for us. Yes, you can put it in a larger pot, and then you have to come to the decision of how big do you want this plant to actually get. How big is your room you're going to keep it in the wintertime? How big is the area where you're going to grow it in the summer? But you can keep potting it up in larger pots until it becomes too difficult to move, I guess.
All right. This listener says, I have chives growing between my pavers. What can I use to get rid of them?
Oh, my gosh. Good for you. I actually think that would be fun. So chives are kind of notorious for self-seeding around, and they have the beautiful purple flowers. Pollinators love chives, and, of course, we love to eat them as an herb. It's one of the perennial herbs that you can easily grow in Minnesota. Well, I would encourage, you could kill them with hot water. You could just continue to cut them off, prune them off, try to pull them out. But if you have really a lot of them, I would just try the hot water method as far as that actually will kill them. And of course, any herbicide, chemical herbicides will kill them. You have to be very careful in following the label on that. And herbicides, of course, you can kill any plant that you're going to put that on.
Right. Before we grab a phone call, here's another one that says, we have 2 mandarin light azalea bushes that were planted in 2017. They bloom every year, but the green foliage seems sparse. We have them fertilized every year, but they seem slow to get bigger. Soil is pretty much clay, and they are on the north side of the house. Any comments there?
Yeah, that kind of is what it is with the azaleas. They tend to be kind of leggy and not a lot of foliage. But I would say if your plants are flowering, they are healthy. Because in many times, I thought the caller was going to say no flowers. And that can be, you know, these azaleas do like shady conditions, but it can be so shady that it's hard for them to get enough sun. But the only thing I would recommend is if they're kind of leggy or sparse, is you can do pruning on them, a small amount of pruning after the flowers are done now, and see if that doesn't encourage some buds to break further down the stem to make it fuller looking. But otherwise, they are kind of leggy. That's kind of how they grow. You'll see them at the arboretum, and you'll see some leggy ones, but pruning might help.
Okay. Let's take a phone call from Dorothy. Dorothy is calling in from Minneapolis this morning. Dorothy, you're on CCO with Mary.
Hello. I have two burning bush shrubs, and they have just really grown too much. And I'm wondering, is this an okay time to prune them, or do I need to wait like into fall?
You can go ahead and prune them now, Dorothy. A burning bush is a very hardy plant. We actually had some of them die in mass a couple of years ago. But yes, if it's growing healthy, you can go ahead and prune that. I would say you want to watch for seedlings on that, actually other plants coming up. Some people have reported that is starting to be an invasive plant, especially in warmer climates. But okay to prune it now, and you're probably not going to damage it with, you know, cutting off a third of it easily. No problem.
Okay. Here's a critic question, Mary. It says, we have a family of woodchucks, groundhogs. Help! They are destroying my garden. What can I do?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Well, so woodchucks live in the ground, and they make a large hole in the ground. They will have multiple hole or entry exit holes to this burrow, but locating where the burrow is one thing. You could try live trapping them, but you can try closing up their burrow. Woodchucks are very destructive. I would try to do some type of barrier so that they cannot get in, especially your vegetable garden. Sometimes they will even dig in from the outside with the fencing, but I would try to use a physical obstruction to get rid of them. Try to figure out where they're living, where they're coming from. And then I would actually have to go online and read what the DNR recommends or how woodchucks are actually controlled in Minnesota. I haven't done that for a while. But you try to make it as inhospitable as you can so they won't move or go somewhere else.
And I think if I tried all that and failed, I would call a pest control company that's local.
Yes, I think trapping is something they do for woodchucks, but woodchucks are big, so you got to have the biggest trap to get them in.
I think that may be in our first question about woodchucks. Moles is one thing, and voles, but woodchucks. All right, Mary. We need to take a break. When we come back, Dolores, you're going to be first up on the phone, and then more text messages here on our Smart Garden Show. We are around every Saturday with our Garden Lawn and Garden Talk here on CCO in the 8 o'clock hour on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. Welcome back on this Saturday morning to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Mary Meyer from the University of Minnesota, answering your lawn and garden questions, of which there are many. Mary, we promised Dolores she'd be first here, calling in from Arden Hills. Thanks for waiting, Dolores. What is your question?
Yes, I received a zygote cactus for Christmas. It's white. It's very pretty with a kind of a pink throat to it. And it says that it likes to be to dry out, but the soil is so porous that when I water it, it just goes through the hole. I'm not quite sure that the soil that I'm keeping it even moist. It's doing well, but it's kind of hard to keep it watered, to let it dry that much. It said keep it dry, let it dry out. Is that the best way to keep it alive?
Yes, I think it is, Dolores. Many plants, especially cactus, do like well-drained soil conditions. Their roots like to have as much oxygen as they do water. And so they're actually sold in very porous or airy soil mixes. So yes, the fact that it drains quickly is a good sign. I can understand what you're saying, though. It seems like the water just runs right through it. It doesn't hold any water. But I would maybe set it in a sink or a place where it can drain and water it a couple of times so that timing-wise, you're actually letting the soil be moist for, I don't know, 5-10 minutes or so. And then that's enough time for the roots to take up moisture and for even though it's a airy mix, it will still hold some water. You will need to water it, on a regular basis, but I would just, it's okay if it runs out. It's a good sign, really.
All right, good. This listener, Lawn and Garden Question, says, I used dormant seeding last winter. I put down crabgrass preventer this spring. Will the grass seed ever germinate? I'm thinking it was a waste of seed.
Oh, gosh, I'm thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Those are two counteracting things. And it does take a while for the dormant seed to come up because it was cold this spring and the soil stayed cold. We know that crabgrass has germinated now. Other lawn seed that was dormant or even seeded this spring is starting to come up. But the pre-emergence kill all the seed. They're not discriminate. Anything that's a seed, they can kill the pre-emergence. So unfortunately, dormant seeding was good, but the pre-emergent after dormant seeding wasn't a good idea.
Right. Another lawn question, Mary, from New Hope. It says, I used a seeded grass mat in my yard. Do you think it'll work, and how long will it take to disappear from my yard? What is that, by the way?
I have not, that mat, I have not used one of those, but that seed impregnated with some, usually fabric and mulch, that you kind of lay down like a mesh on your soil, and everything is in there, and it kind of holds things in place, and it kind of roll those out and put them down. Yes, I think that definitely should work. Timing, it can take a couple or even 3 weeks for some of the seed to germinate. That's our cool season lawn grasses. Some might come up in 7 days. 14 to 21 is actually more normal. So I would give it a good 3 weeks. Try to keep it moist if it doesn't rain. And yes, it's actually a good idea rather than just putting seed down by itself. The mats help to hold moisture as well.
Okay. This listener says, I have thistles growing in my vegetable garden. The roots are very deep and can't dig them all out. What can I use to get rid of them and still feel safe planting vegetables or even eating my rhubarb now?
Well, that's a tough question. Those thistles, the Canada thistle is a gigantic plant. What you see above ground is like the tip of the iceberg with what's underground. And even, yes, this caller knows it well. You pull this up and you just get kind of a white stem on these thistles because the true root system is a couple feet down. It's called a subterranean root system. It's actually a fabulous thing to look at up online and see what that root system looks like, but it's kind of depressing also to see that root system. If you want to plant food crops there, just continually cut off the tops. Continually cut off the tops. Eventually, you will win. Otherwise, you use a chemical control. You can use something like glyphosate, which is translocated. That's Roundup, you put that on the plant, it's taken up and it will move down into the root system. But you got to be really careful that you don't put that on any other vegetables. You kind of have to just specifically treat the sprout that's coming up with a thistle. I would just try cutting it off repeatedly. And then maybe in the fall, after your vegetables are done, if you still see some, then you can use a chemical control.
Okay. A couple of minutes to go, Mary. Let's see how many folks we can help out here. How often, this text says, should I water newly planted reed grasses?
Yeah, so the reed grass, feather reed grass, is one of our uncut or ornamental grasses. This is a cool season grass that loves the weather conditions that we're having now. If you planted it from a container, a pot that you bought in the nursery, once a week is enough to water it. It doesn't require a lot of water.
All right. Boy, oh boy, we're coming down to the last minute or so. What's the best way to get rid of poison ivy? Comes from Ron and Hinckley. How do you get rid of poison ivy?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. So here, poison ivy, a chemical control. If you don't want to use a chemical, then solarization or covering it up. But you have to be really careful, of course, that you don't touch the plant. So you can't go in and start cutting it off with pruners. I mean, this is a sure way, removing it like that, you're going to get the poison ivy. So I would say cover it up, either with an organic mulch or with a tarp or something, or use a chemical control. So this is where chemical control is actually our friend, because poison ivy is a plant. It's got a big root system. And if you put a chemical on it, it will translocate down and kill the root system. So where you have kids and so on, you really don't want a plant like poison ivy, because it is so so difficult with the rash that it causes.
Mary, we are out of time. Thank you so much. Always a pleasure. And we look forward to our next meeting.
Oh, I do too, Denny. It's so fun to talk about gardening.
Thank you.
Talk.
Great. And don't forget to get on the website, extension.umn.edu. You're going to love all the information you're going to find there. Thanks to Mary Meyer from the U of M helping us out on our Smart Garden Show. Get those home improvement questions ready next hour here on 830 WCCO. Stay with us.